All right. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming here on what may be one of our last Saturday morning shows. I did get a lot of feedback recently that we would much prefer to do these shows during the week in the evening. So we are going to try that for a while and see if that makes everybody happier. So thank you for being here this morning. I'm pretty sure that today's show is going to be a fascinating discussion, if I do say so myself. We're going to talk about one of our industry's very favorite topics, and that is commissions, money, fees. Even if you absolutely adore your job as a real estate agent, you do it primarily to make money, and that's what we're going to talk about today. When I say we, I am referring to me and my guest, Molly Wasserman, who you've been hearing chatting with me here on the lines if you got here early. And, of course, you can participate if you'd like to with your questions and comments, and you do those on the webcast screen down there at the bottom left. Just shoot those in. I do my best to get to those, but I can't promise that I will get to all of them, just depending on how we do time-wise. But please do send in your comments, and we'll do our best. Now, I have Molly here with me, but truth be told, I could probably fill up the next hour or two or three or four all by myself with my thoughts and opinions on the whole concept of charging commissions and negotiating commissions and alternatives to charging commissions. But I brought Molly on because she is really smart, and she's well-spoken, and she's interesting, and she also has an awful lot to say on the topic. So if you were here earlier, you heard us chatting about how we've had three-hour conversations. We're not going to do that to you today, but just know we both have an awful lot to say. Those of you who don't know Molly, she is the founder of the ACRE program, and ACRE, A-C-R-E, isn't that clever, stands for Accredited Consultant in Real Estate, right? Did I get that right this time?
You got that right.
Last time I did it wrong. Today's show is not about her ACRE program, but we are probably going to talk some about the concept of real estate consulting, both as a compensation model and a way of doing business, a big picture way of doing business aside from compensation. So good morning, Molly, officially. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Jennifer.
Molly and I connected about a year ago, and we have had several marathon conversations about the real estate industry in general, and it always kind of seemed to go to our commission-based compensation model since we both have so many opinions on that. We both agree that the model as it is flawed in many ways, and that it's probably part of the reason our industry, the real estate industry, is held in such suspicion among the general public. Molly, do you want to comment on that at this point? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, let me state by stating that I think, you know, real estate started as a sales model and profession and should have been, because when real estate, we're talking the 40s, 50s, 60s, even the 70s, real estate was primarily a sales profession, because your entire job was to move the merchandise, similar to people who sold cars, was to move the cars off the lot. Real estate agents traditionally, prior to the advent of agency, their total job was to move the merchandise, and you got paid a commission for doing so, and it made total sense. My questioning of the way we are paid and the whole commission model had to do with when agency, particularly buyer agency, came to the fore. Because we were then, on one hand, we were still paid it just to move the merchandise, only if we move the merchandise. But on the other hand, we were told by our national and state associations, and if you are a realtor, you have to follow a code of ethics, which says that you have a fiduciary responsibility to your client, whether that client be a seller or a buyer. That means that you have to put their interests, their financial interests, above all other interests, including and most especially your own. To me, that was the time that we should have started to question the commission model, because in my way of thinking, that there was a huge conflict of interest. On one hand, we were told that we needed to put the client's interest above our own, but yet we were only paid if we worked in our own interest. I had a problem with that. And, you know, logically, when I tried to discuss it with brokers and managers, the only answer I got was, well, this is the way we've always been paid. But it never made me cease to question it. So does that mean that the majority way for quite some time going forward will be by commissions? Absolutely. But it did prompt me when I prompted me to write my book, Ripping the Roof Off Real Estate, where I started to say we need to instead of saying, well, this way of being paid is bad, we need to put everything into focus. So my always feeling was is that I believe in giving choices. However, real estate commissions, being paid by commission, is one of those choices, and there is nothing wrong with offering that choice to the consumer. However, it should be done with transparency, meaning we need to explain what a commission is. Now, I can continue to go on, Jennifer. Just shut me up.
Nope, we're going to get back to that. So, but that was exactly where I wanted you to go with this. Thank you very much. You led me just where I wanted to be. When I started selling real estate back in 96, now that was way back before I really knew what I was doing, and I certainly wasn't writing about doing it. But even from almost my very first day, I had trouble embracing our compensation structure. And by that, I mean the traditional commission-based model where you're paid a percentage of the sales price. Now, don't worry, I certainly embraced the commission checks that I got. I mean, and they were, you know, very sweet commission checks. So, but I have to say that in the beginning, I felt that those great big, what felt like great big checks were a little bit undeserved. I mean, I looked at the situation and I realized I was spending 10 or maybe 20 hours with a buyer or a seller, and I would end up with a $7,000 paycheck for that time. I really had to ask myself, I'm fairly self-aware, I had to look in the mirror and say, Jennifer, are you really worth $700 or, you know, $350 an hour? Absolutely not. I will probably never be worth, you know, $700 an hour, no matter what I do. So, now, I will say that I got over that particular compensation dilemma, and we will talk about that here in a little bit. We'll probably talk about it a lot, why it's appropriate to pay real estate agents what appear to be very high fees in relation to hours worked. So we are going to get to that. But there were many other questions.
By the way, can I just interrupt to say,
absolutely,
the word appears, and that's mm-hmm. a very important word, because I will tell you that for the vast majority of agents that I have polled live,
mm-hmm.
They don't end up in totality earning that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
They earn a lot less per hour because there
right.
is a lot of unpaid hours.
Well, and that's true, and that's what we'll get to that.
And I want to stress that that mm-hmm. is your experience because you are a very smart agent.
Well, I hadn't quite, you know, put all the pieces and parts together at the time, but it just seemed very odd that I didn't really do all that much work, and I actually enjoyed doing it, and I got a $700 an hour, what appeared to be a $700 an hour paycheck. So, again, I did get over that, but it was one of my original. And the thing is, that's what the general public sees. So, again, what we're going to help you with here in a little bit is to help the public, help your clients understand that you are not making $700 an hour, and we're not going to help you with that by telling you to whine to your client. That's not where we're going with this. But anyway, we'll get to that a little bit later. Thank you, Molly. I appreciate that. There were some other questions that I had throughout my career that I really couldn't come up with answers to. Now, I figured that there were answers, okay? I just didn't know what they were. But I figured that was because I was too new or too stupid or too naive or unsophisticated. So I started asking around, figuring that the other more experienced, more sophisticated, less naive agents in the office would have answers to these questions that I didn't have answers to. So, well, what do you know? No one else had satisfactory answers either. Now, they thought their answers were good, okay? They were certainly satisfied with their answers to these questions, but I wasn't. And I truly dreaded going into a listing appointment and being asked these questions and not having an intelligent answer. So you're wondering what these questions are. Okay. One of the biggies was, and this always bugged me, is why do I make twice as much money to sell a $400,000 house over a $200,000 house? Did I do twice as much work? Did I take on twice as much risk? Did I spend twice as much marketing money? Absolutely not. In fact, in my Denver market, in many cases, the $400,000 market is much stronger than the $200,000 one. If you look at it from a buyer perspective, a $400,000 buyer has more to choose from, and they may be more qualified. A $400,000 listing is much nicer than a $200,000 listing, and in Denver, there are plenty of people who make enough money to buy a $400,000 house. So, again, I questioned, why my paycheck was twice as much on that $400,000 home as it was on that $200,000 home that I sold last month. Okay, so I asked that question. You know what the only satisfactory answer I've ever gotten to that question is? Molly answered it a few minutes ago. It's the way it's done. Okay, now that's not much of an answer, but it's honest and it's true. Okay, fair enough. Now, another similar frustration I've had. An agent friend of mine in Aspen, I used to hang out with this gal who owned a real estate company in Aspen, and she regularly sold, you know, $5 to $10 million properties, and she charged what most of us would consider to be a regular commission, you know. But her paychecks on these houses were in the six-figure range. So she was getting $100,000, $200,000 for selling a property. So
anyway, so I asked my friend, you know, what she did and how she explained it to her sellers that she was worth, you know, $100,000, $200,000, whatever, to sell their house. And the answer that she gave me was, again, like the answer to the $200,000, $400,000 house, the answer was, well, that's the way it's done, and that rich people expect to pay for service, and they don't fuss about it nearly as much as the middle class does. Okay, so again, that was a true and honest answer, that at least in her mind, that is why she was able to charge, you know, these, what a lot of us would consider a pretty sweet payday, because basically people put up with it. People, they paid it. Okay, now, is that the right answer? I don't know. Now, my point in talking about these dilemmas is to assure you that if you have had your own similar mental conversations with yourself, but if you maybe wondered if you were crazy because no one else seemed concerned, I just want you to know that you're not alone. You may not be in a big crowd, but your questions are valid. And something that Molly mentioned a little while ago, and I'd like to reiterate it, and we may talk about it more, is that if you have a question about your compensation, or really your business, but let's talk about compensation. If you have a question about how you're paid and it just doesn't sound right to you, it doesn't feel right to you, then I'll tell you what, your questioning that is probably valid. And it's probably because there is something wrong with that particular model or situation or whatever. And there may not be a satisfactory answer. The answer may be what Molly and I have both said is, well, it's the way it's done. It's the way it's always been done. And if that answer is good enough for you, then that's fine. If it's not good enough for you, you may have to find a different answer. Okay, and we'll get into more of what some of those other answers might be. Some of you might remember a radio show that I did a few years back about the value of a listing agent. Why our fees are what they are. I don't know if any of you remember that. It was a fun one. The hosts of the show were adamant that listing agents are overpaid, and they challenged me to justify the fees that we charge. Well, I feel like I did justify the fees that we charge with flying colors. If you want to listen to that interview, it's a couple of different places on my website, and I can point you to it if you want. But the hosts of the radio show were not at all convinced. And by the end of the show, it was fairly adversarial, and we were not name-calling, but getting pretty close to it. But they maintained their opinions that almost all of the actual work that a listing agent does can be and should be performed a la carte or piecemeal by assistants or transaction coordinator types. And so, therefore, for us to charge thousands of dollars to list a home was utterly ridiculous. Now, a lot of people, even some real estate agents, really, they feel the same way. They see what we do for those big paychecks, and they're underwhelmed by the value received for the money. I mean, seriously, guys, it does not take a lot of time or skill to put a sign in a yard, to create fancy brochures, to hold an open house or two, to ask for feedback every once in a while, and then every 6 weeks demand a price reduction. If you want an unbiased professional opinion on the market value of your home, you can just hire an appraiser for $300 or $400, right? So why on earth do we real estate agents get away with the fees we charge? This is what they wanted to know, and this is what a lot of people want to know. Molly and I are going to answer that question for you today. on more than one level and from more than one perspective. We might even disagree with each other. In fact, I'm probably sure we will, and that's dandy. It'll keep things interesting. But our goal, among other things, is to give you some, internal comfort, internal, I don't know if you can think of the word, but the knowledge that you are worth your fee, whatever that fee is. And if you don't know what your fee is, or if you're not comfortable with what you're currently charging, maybe we can help you figure out what you're worth and how to confidently communicate that to seller prospects. Now, one thing I need to say before we really dive in is that some of what we're going to share with you today may be simply just philosophical for many of you on the call. Because your brokerage firm requires you to work under the traditional commission-only model, or they require that you charge a certain minimum percentage amount. So listen to what we say, but we're going to leave it up to you to determine if our suggestions fit into your business model and your brokerage firm. And let me do the disclaimer that we are talking about commissions. Commissions are negotiable. They are not set by law. There is no standard, regular, traditional, no set commission level. And in the interest of not getting ourselves in trouble, we will not be using specific commission percentages, so bear with us as we do some CYA there just to make sure that we don't get ourselves in trouble. So here's what's going to happen from here on out probably. Molly and I are going to address some of the common questions and concerns that agents have about being paid on commission. We'll probably take turns sharing our responses. And again, we may disagree with each other. We would be happy to take your questions and comments as time permits, so please do share them by submitting them on the webcast screen. Do keep in mind when you're hearing my voice, I am not on the webcast screen, so if you're submitting questions and I'm not getting to them and I'm the one chatting on the phone, that's why. Molly, you've been chatting a little bit, but why don't you kind of introduce yourself formally and tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, my name is Molly Wasserman, and I am the founder of ACRE, which stands for Accredited Consultant in Real Estate Course and Coaching Program. The concept of real estate consulting is one that is confusing, mostly because we have name inflation. A lot of people like to call themselves consultants because it sounds better than saying I'm a salesperson, but they're not really practicing consulting. Consulting is, by the way we define it, is a model that provides quality, transparent choices to the consumer, both in the services that we can provide and how they can be paid for them. We started ACRE in late 2006, so we now have over 200 ACRES who have come through our program. And we are small, but we are growing because we do believe that the consumer is asking for choices. One thing I will point out, and I point out quite a bit, I believe with all my heart, based on our work with consumers, that the consumer, despite what we think, is not necessarily looking for cheap. They are looking for choice. And that's kind of the hallmark that I come from. I also don't believe that there are bad choices. I believe strongly that each client that we work with deserves to have a very individual analysis of their needs, and we need to be able to provide options to them that meet those needs. And those needs should be met in a way that is lucrative both for the consumer and for us. We need to be making a good living. They need to get their money's worth. And that's kind of what I come from. Hope that helps.
Cool. Thanks, Molly. I just dialed in on my regular phone, so if you heard little noises, that's what that was.
I did.
Okay. The first topic that I want to cover today, and honestly, we may not even get past this one, but we'll try. Let's answer the question posed by those real estate radio guys. How can a listing agent justify charging thousands of dollars to do a series of tasks that can easily be handled by various independent parties for significantly less money? Molly, I'm going to let you take this.
Basically, you know, as I say to consumers all the time, our industry, and I say this, by the way, to real estate agents that I have a challenge all the time, and to get a satisfactory answer, you need to bend your thinking a little bit, that I'm going to say something that's very inflammatory. I do not believe that commissions, nor do I think most consumers really believe, as we've been taught to tell them, that commissions are payment for services rendered. They are not. If they were payment for services rendered, then we would get paid a lot less and yet get paid very well per hour worked there would not be a differential in a $600,000 house versus a $300,000 house. Commissions are not payment for services. They are payment for risk mitigation, period. We take high risk. It's a basic rule of economics 101 that we all learn in college or even in high school, that high risk means high reward. It has to mean high reward. If we bend that equation, then things get out of balance. In working in the real estate industry, we deal with high risk. We are expected in the commission system that we carry all the risk, and that, Mr. and Mrs. Consumer, is what you why you are paying to a high reward if successful. Very, very, very seriously. Now, if you would want to pay for the services rendered, then that's your option, and you will pay a lot less and yet will get paid very well. But that's a fee-based system or an hourly-based system. That is not commission. Commission is not payment for services. So why are we paid so much? Because we are carrying all of the risk on our shoulders. The house doesn't sell. If the buyer doesn't buy, we get paid nada. And we have all those hours invested that we will get paid nada. In fact, I'll go a step further and say that when a transaction closes, the seller, who we look at as paying for the services, although I will tell you that buyers are paying through the price of the house, when that transaction closes, it is in fact subsidizing all of the unpaid hours that that agent has worked. Now, the seller will say, well, that's not fair. Why should I have to pay a high rate and subsidize all the people who took advantage of the agent's time and expertise and never paid them a dime? Because that's how the commission system works. Now, of course, with the skill set that I teach, I can give the consumer a choice and say, that may not be the right. If you would like to not pay a high commission, we have other choices for you. But if you ask the question, why are commissions so high? They are high because they are very high risk, period. Don't believe me? Look at a attorney that works on personal injury. They will work on many, many cases that will never be judged favorably in their client's interest. And they will not make a dime on all of the hours they put in. However, if they are successful on a given case, they get paid a third. They get paid X percent, and we think that's high. Real estate, when you take a look at lawyers who work on personal injury, it's usually a third of the award. And yet, we don't have a lot of consumers complaining about personal injury attorneys. Why? Because they realize that only a small percentage of the cases that they work on are going to successfully go awarded in their client's behalf. We need to start to educate the consumer that real estate is high risk. A lot of buyers, sometimes no fault of their own, will not buy, and yet they will use a lot of an agent's time. And that's if an agent's being very careful to pre-qualify their buyer. But let's face it, a job you thought you were going to take that was precipitated and moved didn't happen. Circumstances changed. You did, all of a sudden you lose your job. You can't buy a house.
Lender requirements change, and a gazillion things can happen. That makes a high, a very qualified buyer no longer.
We don't need to say how many things can happen when the house is listed. That means that it will not close, especially in today's times with our short sales and foreclosures and everything else. So when we are dealing with real estate, we are dealing with a high-risk venture. I talk about this in my book, but it's the best example I know of. Can you imagine if a couple who is dealing with fertility issues decides to go to an in vitro clinic? And they find out they're a candidate, and they're sent to the business office to talk about how they're going to pay for their in vitro treatment. And they explain that it'll be so many tries, and it'll be a certain fee. Now, can you imagine if this nice couple said, I don't think I want to pay that way. I'll tell you what, I will pay you, and I'll pay you more, but I will only pay you if and when we get pregnant. How much would that in vitro clinic have to charge?
Mm-hmm.
You need another example? Somebody wants help on paying their taxes, but they tell the nice tax accountant, look, I know that you usually get paid by the hour or for a flat fee to work on my taxes, but see what? I only want to pay you if Uncle Sam is nice to me in the end. Yet we are expected in our industry to pay the way we pay. So,
well, and one thing I want to make sure we, and I think we agree on this, is that there is absolutely nothing wrong with the commission-based model. I mean, there are things wrong with it, but there's nothing wrong with being paid on commission philosophically,
and
in that you're you are taking on more risk.
Absolutely. And by the way, there will be people, and I say this in my book, my mother would never pay for a real estate transaction in any way other than a commission. Why? She's very risk averse.
Mm-hmm.
She would just never do that. But mm-hmm. because I am her daughter, she understands that she is choosing to pay that way, and she understands that there will be a high, she would prefer to pay mm-hmm. a lot more but have no risk. There's nothing wrong with that as long as it's transparent.
I just closed on a deal yesterday, my own personal property in Denver. It was a property I owned. I hired a real estate agent, a local real estate agent, and I paid her up front what most would consider an insulting fee because, one, I paid it up front, okay, and, two, I was going to do all of the work. I mean, I did everything that could possibly be done without having my feet on the ground there. So she was happy, I think, you know, with getting an upfront fee, and she didn't have to spend more than a couple hours, if that. And I was delighted because I only had to pay that ridiculously low, relatively speaking, fee. And we both came away happy, and we both knew what we were getting. I knew what I was getting for my money. She knew what she was expected to do for her money. And that I was the opposite of your mother, is I was very happy to write that check up front because I'm not risk averse. So,
but also we need to educate the consumer, and I've done a lot of this, and I teach our agents to do this, is to be very upfront with the consumer that we can influence, but we do not control the outcome of their transaction,
mm-hmm.
that we can be our best skills, but there are things that are beyond our control. Now, if you know that the real estate agent cannot control the outcome, then you become a little less risk-averse because you mm-hmm. realize that you are paying for services, and things are going to happen as they happen.
One thing, and I've ranted and raved about this some, and I think we may have dealt with this, but I want to really drill it in, is that you will hear people complaining, real estate agents, you'll see it on the forums, you'll see it, you know, in person, that they're so tired of working for free. This isn't fair. We shouldn't have to work for free. I'm going to start charging up front. I'm going to start demanding retainer fees. I'm going to start charging my clients for gas. I'm going to, you know, all of these things because they're unhappy about working for free. And if any of you follow my blog, I rant and rave about that just as we've been talking, you are not working for free. Now, the better you are at your job, the less often you will work without payment. But when you agree to work on commission, you are agreeing to take on risk. You're agreeing to to absorb all the risk of the transaction, and you expect to be paid for that. Now, where I want this to go before we move on to the next piece of this is when you're out speaking with a seller or, you know, pitching your services, selling your services, and we're going to talk about that in a bit, if you can internalize that feeling, that certainty that a big part of what you're being paid for is risk mitigation, risk management. You're taking on the entire risk of the transaction. You'll feel better about the percentage that you're charging. Conversely, when you are asked to discount your fees, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but when somebody pressures you to discount, hopefully this gives you a little more internal fortitude. Maybe that was the word I was looking for earlier. To be able to say no, not snottily, not defensively, but just from a very calm, confident place in your heart, because you know that now, wait a minute, what I'm doing is worth what I'm charging, and here's a big piece of that. I am going to talk here in a little bit about some other ways to bust objections, except I absolutely hate that term, but, you know, ways that you can sit in front of a seller very calmly and confidently and talk about your commission without resorting to whining, which I hate. Now, Molly, one thing I'd like you to talk about is the real estate radio guys, you know, they think that a listing agent, all they do is a series of tasks. You know, that we do brochures. In fact, it was funny. I was talking to a listing agent a couple years ago, and he was very angry because a client had fired him in the middle of his contract. He was very upset about that. And he was writing, you know, he was arguing with the seller about, you know, how dare you fire me? I've done all this work. And he was saying, you know, I kept your brochure box full. You know, I mean, every few days I was filling up your brochure box. And he kind of had a handful of other – and I said, are you seriously? This was a $500,000 property. And I was like, wait a minute. Seriously, that's your argument? That, you know, you've earned your $10,000, $20,000, whatever that would be, you know, paycheck or, whatever, because you kept a brochure box full? Really? But there's a lot of that mindset in our industry that what we do is, you know, create brochures and post on Craigslist, and maybe if we're really sophisticated, we do a little writer on the sign that says, call this 800 number, you know, whatever, marketing. What say you, Molly?
I call it my F words, functionary versus fiduciary, and that the two ain't the same. And what you have been talking about are functionary tasks, which can, although they may be done better by the real estate agent, because that's what we do all the time, that they can be done by the client, they can be done by an assistant, they can be done by technology, pretty much just as well. That's not the value or the highest value of a real estate agent. A listing agent's highest value, I will say, is not even in finding a buyer, although we certainly it's part of good marketing. Their real value is getting the best offer once the buyer is found, negotiating the best offer and troubleshooting. That's fiduciary. I call it my F words because people's eyes glaze over, but the bottom line is when we talk about our value, we need to talk about what we do as a fiduciary, not as a functionary. Now, when I say functionary, people think that I'm discounting, using that word, those tasks. They have to be done. Putting brochure boxes and whatever, blah, 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 putting the sign in the yard. Sign has to go in the yard. That doesn't mean it has to be done by the agent. And frankly, it is a bad argument for establishing one's value. You are making sure that that transaction goes to closing. That is troubleshooting the transaction. That, with negotiating and pricing, is what we do. That is fiduciary.
Well, and for anyone who has heard my live presentation on, you know, for sale signs don't pay the bills, which there may be a handful of you on here, you may remember that I talk about the most important parts of a listing agent's job are, one, building rapport with the seller, and two, preparing the product for market. I say the least important thing we do, and this is my opinion, Molly may not agree, but the least important thing we do as listing agents is market the property, mainly because that's easy to do, and the vast majority of marketing the property can be a functionary task.
I don't disagree with you. I actually 100% agree with you.
Yeah, but, you know, it is not functionary to go into a property and to help the seller understand the importance of accessibility, accessibility, pricing, and condition. You know, that's not a functionary task. That takes people skills. That takes an understanding of the buyer. It takes a lot of things. Okay. You know, to build that rapport with a seller to get to the point where they'll listen to you, to know what it takes to sell a home in this particular market, in this particular price range. Things like this are what the seller is actually paying you for. And then, of course, negotiating and getting the whole mess to closing, which is a whole different can of beans there. But these are the sorts of things that if you were to ever sit down and try to, a lot of agents try to do this, is they try to put a dollar value. I did this once early in my career, try to put a dollar value to what I do. And I was horrified because here I was trying to justify my fee for someone, and I came up with about $400 worth of value. And, I mean, I started throwing in ridiculous things like, well, I had to buy a lockbox, you know, or whatever. And mm-hmm. That was when it occurred to me, this was one of those unanswerable questions at the time, was like, holy moly.
You cannot justify, mm-hmm. I'm going to state that, you know, and again, this is my opinion, but I'm going to say we have made a huge mistake because our brokers, when people complain about our commissions, our brokers say, well, just tell them how much you do for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I will tell you, most consumers have no earthly idea how much we do, but the bottom line is pulling out a list of 106 things you do on a listing mm-hmm. is not going to justify, especially if you then throw in, well, why is my cousin's house, who sold for $300,000, worth half of my $600,000 house? You cannot justify a commission based on what you do. Stop doing it. It won't work. The consumer doesn't buy it. And, in fact, it actually, I believe, erodes your value.
I think
because
so too.
And they're trying to justify mm-hmm. the unjustifiable because you have the wrong premise. Again, commissions mm-hmm. are not payment for services. They are payment for risk mitigation.
So what we're paid for is the risk mitigation, which pretty much encompasses everything, but let's make that just a piece of it. The risk mitigation, we are willing to work on contingency. That's a piece of what we're paid for. The functionary duties, if mm-hmm. we don't do them, we're paying somebody else to do them, so be it. So we are paying for brochures. We are paying to put a sign in the yard. We are paying for this and such and our lockboxes and our MLS services and those sorts of things. And we're paying for our expertise.
And by the way, that expertise, gosh, this is scary because you and I are sounding more and more alike. That expertise is that undefinable but so mm-hmm. valuable. And
yeah.
that's
or,
why
and
it's
it,
real
and it
hard
often
to put
doesn't
a dollar
happen.
Figure.
Yeah.
And, yes,
now,
and, mm-hmm. and it does not always have to do with years of experience.
Yeah. Now, those of you who have seen my sample listing presentation, either in my VIP lounge or in the Mega Toolkit or elsewhere, I have a page in there that says, what does a realtor do for all that money? And I wrote this years ago before I met Molly, certainly, before I'd given any thought to this. And you can, I'm sure it's in those sample listing presentations, but I think it's something like, okay, what does a realtor do for those, what seems like so much money? And I said there were four things that a realtor does. This, I didn't think about the risk mitigation, but I said you pay for their time, their systems, their expertise, and their connections. And it's not exactly the same thing as what we're talking about, but I remember when I wrote that thinking, okay, they're not just paying for my fancy brochures. They're paying for my time. They're paying for the people I know who are going to help us get the job done. They're paying for my expertise. I have done this before, and I know what I'm doing better than you do. And whatever the other thing was, time,
and by
systems.
The way,
systems. I pay for the MLS. I have fantastic systems in place that do help get the home sold.
And the other thing that you are paying for when you pay by commission is to have no extra thrown in. In other words, you work and you work and you work till the listing sells, and if it falls through, you work and you work and you work again with the next buyer. And you work and you work and you work again till it goes to the closing table, whereas mm-hmm. if you were to pay for the time by the hour or by a flat fee, then you would be due another payment if the first buyer fell through. That is the
true.
You know, it's, in other words, to the consumer, it's I might be paying a high amount, but I'll never pay more than that.
We have a question that came in, and I'm not going to get to it right now, but I think it's an interesting one, and I hope that we can get to it. Jonathan says, I would agree that listing commissions are payments for risk management, but buyer agent commissions do involve a lot of work. I'm not going to get to that right now, but I did want to acknowledge that as a good question. I'm not sure that we're going to talk about buyer agent commissions today. We may in the future. If we get to that, we get to that.
It's another whole topic.
It is another whole topic, especially when you're talking about alternatives to the straight commission. But it's a good question. Now let's move on to sort of a related question. The question often arises on how to communicate your value to a seller to minimize the likelihood that seller is going to ask for a discount or that they choose another agent based solely on the commission that agent charges. So basically, how do I convince a seller that I'm worth my fee? I love this question because the answer isn't what you're thinking, at least not at first. The first thing you have to do if you're going to convince a seller that you're worth your fee is to convince yourself. Okay, there's no way you're going to sell something you don't believe in, and that includes your value as a listing agent. I want to give you a distinction here. I don't mean that you convince yourself you're worth your fee because you need that amount of money. No, I mean that you feel in your heart and your soul that you bring that much value to the table. Now, hopefully what Molly and I just discussed helps you be a little more confident in the value that you bring, that you take on risk, that what you do takes skill and expertise and creativity and effort, and did we mention risk, and that there is a lot more going on behind the scenes than it appears. But the fact of the matter is that many agents are not worth their fee, whatever they think, whether they think they are or not. If all you know how to do is the three P's, which is put a sign in the yard, put it in the MLS, and pray, and then follow up with that fourth P, which is the price reduction, then I will have to agree with the general public that, yes, you are overpaid. That's a discussion for a different day, and, in fact, actually, that will be a discussion for a different day because I am going to do a show on that here in the next month or so. But if we assume that everyone on this call does go above and beyond the three Ps for their sellers and is, indeed, whatever fee they've come up with, they're worth whatever fee they've come up with for themselves, then how can you persuade a skeptical seller, especially if that seller is also looking at discount or minimum service brokers? Now, again, I am not going to criticize discount or minimum service brokers. I think as long as they're transparent in what they offer or don't offer, their business model is perfectly fine if it works for them. We may talk about that a little bit. We may not. But answering the question as to, you know, how to be worth your fee, how to persuade a seller that you're worth your fee, it does go beyond the big picture of that, goes beyond the scope of today's show. But from a purely commission-based discussion, that is, if a seller challenges you on the amount of your fee and wants you to charge less, let me give you some ideas on how to deal with that, and then we'll get Molly's too. Well, wait a minute. Before we do that, I want to talk about some of the objection busters that you may have already heard of. I can think of two. If Molly has any, she can throw those in. But I can think of two very common commission objection busters that we've all been trained on, and neither one of them gives me the warm fuzzies. There's the dollar bill analogy and variations of it, and there's the, if I can't hold strong negotiating my own fee, how strong will I be negotiating for you? Okay, let me tell you about the dollar bill analogy and why I don't like it. It goes something like this. You take out a dollar bill, and you start tearing it up. Okay, first you tear it in half with the explanation that this is the percentage of my fee that goes to the agent who brings the buyer. Okay? Then you tear off a portion of the half that's left, and you say, and this is what goes to my broker. You tear off another little bit, and you say, and this is what goes into marketing. Then you tear off another portion that goes to taxes, so that all you're left with is this little tiny sliver that goes in your pocket. That's the dollar bill analogy. So it's a very, I guess, visual description of how little of that dollar bill you end up with at the end of the day. I absolutely hate this approach. Mainly because sellers don't care at all about what goes into your pocket. They care what comes out of theirs. Yes, they do need to understand that there's a cost of doing business, and they certainly need to understand that you share that total commission with the other with the buyer agent. But otherwise, it really just comes across as whiny. Molly, do you agree with that, or you want to argue about it?
Yeah, I was about to say, whiny. I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, you're never going to convince somebody of your value by telling them you're not getting paid enough. I mean, you've got to convince somebody that you actually are worth that. Nobody hires you, or they shouldn't, because they feel sorry for you. I mean, I guess sometimes it happens, but when we're talking about this much money, it's a bad plan. So,
and by the way, it's very similar to when a seller says, well, I have to price it at blah, 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 because I need that much money. The market doesn't care. And
right.
Don't care.
That's true. Now, the other strategy that is often advised to break through a commission objection is the, and I think it's dismissive, is the, if I can't hold strong on negotiating for myself, blah, 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 how do you expect me to be strong negotiating for you? Here's the thing. I don't think that fits this situation, because in a real estate transaction, it's the buyers and sellers who are negotiating, not the agents. And also, to me, it just sounds cocky and arrogant. Now, I think some people can pull it off, and I have heard agents say it, and it actually comes across kind of warm and cute, and everybody laughs, and they're all friends. But to me, it's a real, it's one of those, what do you call that, non sequiturs? You know, it just doesn't follow if I can't, because we are really not the ones making decisions for the buyers or sellers as far as how much they're going to pay. Molly, do you have any additional thoughts on that?
Yes, I do, and that means my famous Nordstrom Walmart speech.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually when I get a question, usually from somebody I do not know, a seller who's shopping commissions. And basically they say, well, what do you charge? Of course, I say, I don't know. What are you looking for?
Yeah.
Well, I need to know what you charge. And, of course, my answer, because I work as a consultant in Offer Choices, is I don't have a set thing to charge. It depends on the situation. And, by the way, you may choose to not even pay by commission. There are other options.
having said that, they'll usually say something like, well, so-and-so down the street will only charge X percent. That's when I go into my Nordstrom Walmart speech, which goes basically, in real estate there's Nordstrom and there's Walmart. I only do Nordstrom. Now, as a consultant, I'm going to give you lots of different ways to pay for Nordstrom. But in terms of the quality of the service I provide, I only do Nordstrom because I know, based on my experience and expertise, that Nordstrom is what is going to get you the most in your pocket when you get up from that closing table. Now, there are a lot of agents out there who do Walmart. And if Walmart is what you're looking for, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think you need to work with one of them. But that's not what I do. What you have done is basically set, and yes, that will sound very arrogant to a lot of people, but I say it with a lot of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I have done is I've established my value. And I've also made them very curious. And then all of a sudden, they don't really want what the Walmart agent, they want the Nordstrom agent.
Mm-hmm.
And I have said in a very clear way, it's nothing wrong with that, but that's what not what I do.
You know, it's interesting because I this is somewhere we disagree a little bit, and I'm not going to go into it today because I actually love Walmart. I think it's great. I think you get good value, and you know, everything, pretty much everything I need is at Walmart, and so I'm actually very happy to be a Walmart kind of gal.
And by the way,
yeah.
And I would agree with you because I'm a Walmart kind of gal too. But then I'm a Walmart kind of gal for a lot of the things of T-shirts. This is why, again, I call it commodities versus quality services.
Mm-hmm.
In my book, I talk about that. If I'm looking for a package of underwear for my husband or kids, that package of underwear, whatever brand name I use, is the same package of underwear whether I buy it at the cheapest department store or the most expensive boutique. The underwear is the same. It is a commodity, and therefore I will shop it by price.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you have won the lottery and you have won millions of dollars, you are going to find yourself the best tax attorney you can get your hands on, and you will pay whatever their hefty fee is because their services are not a commodity. What their expertise is going to make the difference on how much you keep in your pocket and how much goes to Uncle Sam. So you're going to pay a high cost that's a Nordstrom service.
Ooh, I love that, it. Okay. You might have just talked me out of my argument. But
that's basically what my only thing to say to the consumer is understand that real estate is made up of functionary and fiduciary. Functionary services, you shop it by price because it can be done by anybody. But fiduciary types of services, they are priceless. They will make all the difference in the world in how much you keep in your pocket. You choose.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking at the time, and you have to leave in 15 minutes, and I want to make sure that we cover the things that I was determined to cover and get to questions if we can. So let me finish up with some of our planned things here. And I really, really want you to – I was just so impressed with what you said to me this morning. So let me talk about one – and Molly has alluded to this, but one way to very clearly demonstrate to a seller – the differences between the different model or the different why you won't discount, why you may not discount your commission just because they ask, why you're worth what you charge, and this really brings in the risk mitigation piece of it, okay? So this is a tactic out of Molly's rule book, and I absolutely love it, and I've actually used it for years, even before I met Molly, and I promise you it works fantastic. Molly, do you want to describe the hybrid kind of our hybrid model that we came up with, or the three options, or I don't remember what we called it. You know what I'm talking about?
No, you're snowing me.
Okay. Well, let me now remember when I said earlier that not all of you will have the ability to do some of these things because of your broker's policies or your office policies or whatever. This is one of those things that you may or may not be able to do. But if you can do it and you can make this work, again, this is what I did in my business, is you go into the seller and you offer two or three options of how they can pay you.
Okay, I'm following.
Okay.
Sorry.
And now I will say that I didn't do this until I was with RE/MAX, and it was part of the reason I went to RE/MAX so that I had more control over how I was compensated for my work. Okay, so if you're with a traditional split company, you may or may not have this ability. You go into your seller and you offer them two or three choices of how to pay you. Choice number one is your full commission. Okay, commission only, 100% risk. and maybe that's, what does somebody call it, 10 chickens. So that's 10 chickens. Or option B is they will pay an upfront fee, non-refundable fee, and you'll reduce that 10 chickens fee down to, say, 7 chickens. Okay? So you're sharing the risk. The seller is paying you an upfront fee that they're not going to get back, and in return for that upfront fee, you reduce your success fee, your commission. The third option, and this is where I'm going to guess most people would not be able to do it unless they're in a 100% company. The third option is that they pay you upfront or some semblance of an upfront.
Or they pay you when the services are rendered.
When the services are rendered, but it is not contingent on the outcome. So, you know, they could pay you, you know, what some people call a flat fee, but you get it up front. They pay you.
Can I put this in a real world perspective?
Yeah, do.
If you are taking a listing, a share the risk scenario would be that you break the transaction into three parts: the pre-sale or getting it ready for sale, the actual period where the house is on the market, and then the period from when you get an accepted offer until it closes. That first third might be a payment, true payment fee for services.
Hmm.
You are going to do X number of services to get this home prepared and ready for sale. When those services are rendered and the house is ready to go on the market is when that payment is due. Then we go into a shared risk where you don't get paid until the house sells. Just a kind of a little scenario to kind of think about.
I like that. And you know what I think is good about this, if any of you decide to kind of take this on as your model, is it really does force you to figure out what you're worth. And Molly, I don't think we'll have time to talk about this, but part of Molly's program is that you actually sit down and spend an hour or two or three or four coming up with your value, because you do. And I think that's an exercise everybody should do. But you
and
figure
if,
out.
And frankly, yeah. You know, even if you never charge anything other than commissions, if
mm-hmm.
you go through the exercise of figuring out your hourly worth, then you will never, never undervalue yourself again. We don't think in our industry in terms of hourly worth. We look at a commission check of $7,000, $10,000, or whatever, $100,000, whatever it is, and we forget about all of the unpaid hours. And,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not saying free hours, I'm saying unpaid hours, the
mm-hmm.
buyers that never bought, homes that never sold. We don't, but the exercise that I do with when I teach a class live, and I do it very often, is to ask you to take your gross commission income from last year, divide it by 50 because I'm going to give you 2 weeks off for vacation. So you have your average weekly income. Then divide it by the number of hours you actually average in a week. Not what you think you'd like to, but what truly you're working. Most agents are working for less than $10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I do it over and over again. So we don't think in terms of our hourly worth.
Now let's back to presenting this information. I love, and again, this is how I did it. I never offered the third option. I didn't do the fully non-contingent, and I have hesitations on it. But I like the way Molly presented that. I think that would work for me. But anyway, when you explain it that way, you're not being patronizing, you're not being defensive, you're not being condescending. You're explaining very clearly why your commission is what it is. And when you give the seller a choice, they focus more on what their choice is as opposed to should they be, you know, negotiating. I have found it, and maybe this doesn't sound very soulful, but it is rather distracting. You know, when you give someone a choice, they stop worrying about beating you up and they start trying to figure out which choice is better for them. And that's not – actually, I shouldn't have said that. That's not manipulative. It's truth. You're going in with valid options.
What are we taught in Real Estate 101, Jennifer, about when you want an appointment? You don't say, do you want to make an appointment with me? You say, do you want to meet me at 6 o'clock or 9
mm-hmm.
o'clock?
Mm-hmm.
They have the choice. Then either way you win, you get the appointment. In the same way, if you are able to give the consumer payment options, then you never get commissionectomy
mm-hmm.
because if they choose a commission, they understand that they are going to be paying a premium to have no
mm-hmm.
risk.
Yeah, that's it exactly. Now, we don't have the time today to talk about, to do a full-on discussion of winning listings over the competition. But I want to add one more thing to this concept, and then if Molly see if Molly has anything else to add, and then we'll hit some questions. But never, if you're sitting with a seller and he's telling you that so-and-so will do it for this and so-and-so will do it for that, and or you're, you know, they're considering an MLS-only entry, or, you know, somebody's friend will do it for free, whatever, okay, never, ever put down your competition. Okay, no matter, I mean, even if they're full service, if they're full fee, if they're a discounter, if they're MLS-only, never, ever put down your competition. Okay, not with your words, not with your tone, not with your attitude. Don't make some snotty comment about how, you know, well, you get what you pay for. I think there are ways to say that without coming across. See, here's the problem, is that when you put down your competition, the only thing it does is make you look bad. Okay? It also criticizes your seller's judgment, because the seller is obviously considering this other guy or gal. So if you're making condescending, critical remarks about that person, the seller isn't going to be very appreciative of that, because you're criticizing him. The other thing, and this is that a lot of times, and Molly and I may disagree on this, but a lot of times you'll go, you know, somebody will say, well, my friend will do it for a lot less. And our automatic assumption is that that friend is a part-timer who, you know, sells one house a year and doesn't know their head from their, you know what. And that may not be true. You know, their friend may be the biggest agent in town, and you just don't know that. Or they could be an exceptional real estate agent that's truly doing it for free or for cheap. So if you go in and automatically criticize, again, it's just going to make you look bad. So when you're talking to a seller and you're in competition with someone who is going to charge less, you're much better off, and again, this is a different conversation to have on a different day, you're much better off focusing on selling him on you, and there are ways to do that without pitching, than you are putting down the competition. So let's talk real quick about the concept of discounting. When I made this announcement that when I made the announcements, I welcomed all of you to write in with your questions, and I got, you know, some good ones. I've got a lot of good ones, but the one that came in over and over again was about how to. Well, there are two. One is, what do I do when my friends, family, and past clients ask for a discount, or the variation of, should I give my friends, family, and past clients a discount? And then there were a couple other ones that I think I'll hit once Molly gets off the phone. So, Molly, do you want to?
Yeah. And again, it was interesting because Jennifer emailed me and said, well, I sure you probably disagree with giving a discount. And I said, actually, no, I don't. With a past client. Again, commissions are payment for risk mitigation. A past client is probably much less risky in terms of whether or not you are going to get paid on that transaction, and therefore I would have no problem, because your risk is lower, that your reward be lower.
Isn't that brilliant? I just thought that was, because I agree. I'm all over giving a discount, and I hate that that's a dirty word, but I'm all over giving special pricing to people who are loyal to me, to past clients, to people I've worked with in the past, and to friends and family, because they would do it for me. So I do think that we have a quid pro quo here in our industry that we tend to get very snooty about. But, you know, when you have a very good friend who does some business and you go to them, you're probably expecting to get very special pricing. And I think our friends are entitled to very special pricing from us as well.
And also we expect that they're going to do their transaction with us, that they're not going to cancel listing halfway in. Mm-hmm. So it is less risky.
It is, and you know, there are a lot of people who don't agree that friends, family, and such are good clients, and we can talk about that some other day. But assuming that they are, which I think for the most part they are, then I have absolutely no problem giving them a special price. I will say that I've never worked with family, so I can't speak to that. But my friends very rarely asked for special pricing. I got that far more from strangers. So just something to keep in mind. Now, Molly is going to give away Molly, before she leaves us, I want to go ahead and give her a chance. Molly wrote a book called Ripping the Roof Off Real Estate, and it's a lot of what we've talked about today, but it goes far more into being a real estate consultant and what that means and how to make it happen, and it's a good read. So Molly's going to give away one. Maybe you could talk her into two.
You could talk me into two. I need to go, and again, much apologies. I'd love to do this.
Nope,
again.
I should have told you. That's my fault, but I'll just continue babbling here for a few more minutes, and I'll let you go, and I'll talk to you later.
It was fun. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
One of the questions that came in that was sort of related to discounts for friends and family, but it was, let's see, do you reduce your commission when you double end? Okay. And sort of a related, do you reduce your commission for multiple transactions? And I'm going to answer both of those from my perspective. Molly may have a different perspective. But my perspective is actually those are two completely different topics or two completely different situations. Double ending is when you are the listing agent and you find the buyer. So you are working both the listing side and the buyer side, and so you are entitled to the full commission that you negotiated. I do not negotiate that. If I bring the buyer, I expect to get the whole banana. Okay, why? Well, because if I have a ready, willing, and able buyer that crosses my path, that's a paycheck for me. And it's going to be a disincentive if I have already negotiated myself a lower commission if I sell them my listing. So it's going to be awfully tempting to take them down the street and sell them something else. Okay, would I like to say that I would never do that? I'd like to say that, but I think especially if you've negotiated yourself a very deep discount for double ending, I mean, some people say they'll do it for free. I got to tell you, I'm going to have a hard time getting excited about showing that buyer my listing. I'm sorry, but that's just the truth. Even if it weren't the truth, my seller may perceive it as such. In any event, it's a very easy way to explain to the seller, no, I don't believe that's ethical because it provides a disincentive for me to sell. It provides a disincentive for me to try to sell your house myself, and they will understand that and they'll accept it. So, no, I do not discount for double ending, not even a little bit. On the other hand, if somebody does multiple transactions, as in I have the listing and they're going to buy, or they're going to buy and then they're going to list their old house, yes, I do provide a discount on that. I provide it on the second closing. I don't do it on the first closing because there's no guarantee there's going to be a second, but I will do it on the second closing, and sometimes that takes a little finesse to try to figure out how to do that legally. Basically, I do that to ensure their loyalty and because it is a bit of a lower risk. They are already somewhat committed to me, and so I feel like it's just fair to reward them for that. Okay. Okay, Jill, this is an interesting comment. When we're talking about the dollar bill analogy or basically explaining to a seller how our commissions are divided up, in some markets, and this was not the case in Denver, so this surprised me when I discovered in other markets it works differently. In some markets, it's somewhat customary to divide the total commission in half. So let's say that if you negotiated a 1% commission, let's say, with a seller, then you would split that in half with the buyer agent. If you negotiated a 27,000% commission, you would split that in half with the buyer agent. Not all markets do it that way. In Denver, it's not done that way. The buyer agent commission is set. The listing agent commission, is negotiated, not set. But they are very often different. So that is one negotiating strategy that applies in some markets that you can walk in and say, okay, you know, how much do you want to pay the buyer agent? And here's what, you know, here would be a good amount to do that, and then you basically double that. That is one approach. In Denver, that's not how we did it. Oh, interesting question. Jay wants to know, what about reducing the rate for sale by owner? And he's speaking specifically if you were a new agent getting started. I am philosophically adamantly opposed to giving a for sale by owner a reduced rate if you're planning on charging your other clients a quote-unquote full rate. I don't think it shows integrity. If you have a rate that you think you are worth and you go out and you buy business, now if you charge everybody that reduced amount, I'm fine with that, and I'm fine with a new agent not charging as much as an experienced agent. I have no problem with that, but I don't have a problem with charging one set of people a lower rate specifically to get their business, you know, versus your retail customers who actually come to you, call you up on the phone and say, Jay, come list my house. Okay, I don't think that shows integrity. I don't like it. Does it happen? Of course it happens, but I don't like it. I hope I made that clear. Let's see, Kevin, how would you respond to a seller who negotiates your commission through a clause in the sales contract? Well, in Colorado, that's kind of easy to do because it's not appropriate to discuss commissions in a sales contract. All you would have to say is, gee, that's not appropriate to do. I'm guessing what you're referring to is, let's say you get a low offer and the seller comes back and says, well, you know, I'll take this if you'll reduce your commission X amount. If that's what you're referring to, I'll try to answer that. If it's not, go ahead and clarify for me. But my opinion on that, Jackie Leavenworth did a show with me last year, and if any of you heard that, it was phenomenal. I think it might be in Club SWS this month in the archives, I think. Anyway, her answer to that was brilliant, and it's basically, if you, Mr. Seller, if I want this deal more than you want this deal, then it's not a good deal to do. So if you want me to kick in my commission, how did she put it? She put it a lot better than I'm going to, but that you really can say no to those sort of commissionectomies. And if the seller doesn't want to sell the house badly enough, then it may not be the right deal to put together. Now, have I done it? Absolutely, I've done it. I have. But I would say if you're going to kick in money from your own commission, do it later in the deal, not right at the sales contract. Let's get the buyer and seller committed to each other and both of them relatively happy with what we have without the agents already kicking in at the beginning, because if you kick in at the beginning, you're going to continue kicking in the whole time. So as we're all committed to the deal, you know, at inspection or maybe even appraisal, I might be tempted to throw a few dollars at it, but I'd really rather not do that up front. If that makes sense. Good question, George. What was my reasoning to start a discount brokerage at one point in my career? Said, I have no problem with discount brokerage, okay? I had a discount brokerage at one point in my career, and there were ways that I mitigated my loss, that I made sure my risk. I made sure that listings that I took were listings I could sell, that I was in tune with the sellers. I was not tempted to take listings that I couldn't sell. And with buyers, I got full price. So I was happy with my discount model. It worked fairly well. We were pretty profitable. I don't have any problem with it whatsoever, as long as, you know, you're charging everybody pretty much you're charging everyone the same amount and you're doing the same services and you're not discriminating against people. So I think that a discount model can be profitable and it can be very rewarding, as long as you're not giving the store away with your, you know, as long as you're able to manage the risk that you're taking by charging a lower fee. I think I'm going to let you all go. We have a few more questions here, and I know some of you have emailed me questions. I will answer those individually and maybe with a follow-up blog. But I appreciate you all sticking with me today. Hope you have a wonderful rest of June, 4th of July, and we'll touch base in the middle of July. All right. Thank you all so much for coming, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.